Howdy. You're listening to Wild West Filmmaking, exploring the outlaw way of indie film. Raw stories and real lessons from the frontier. Hosted by yours truly, Josh David Jordan.
Okay, all right. Here we are. This is Wild West Filmmaking Podcast. This is episode one. So if there's any glitches or if you hear a garage door open or if you hear a cat meow, that's on me because we are at my house. And my wife, Jessica, thought this would be a great idea to talk about how I make films and invite my friends who work with me and people who I'm inspired by. So this is Wild West Filmmaking. And, you know, there's no map out there for how to make a film. It's sort of like I just wanted to have something where it's kind of like the Goonies hand-drawn map. The treasure could be here. We don't know. You have to find out where that's at. So our first guest is Michael Periscavis. You may know him from Ant-Man and the Wasp, Frozen. I'm going to leave a bunch of these things out. The newest one is Agatha All Along, which, you know, anywhere I go recently, it's plastered everywhere and it's on my feeds and social media. And I got off the plane in Los Angeles and it was just Agatha All Along all the way down the escalator. So welcome, Michael Periscavis.
Thanks, Josh, for having me. It's always an adventure. And you say, our Goonie squad, we need a fearless leader to show us the way. And appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, and my favorite ice cream is Rocky Road, which is kind of crazy. Yeah, so, you know, Michael, I've known you for a while, but our listeners have not. Let's just dive into, we're just going to talk, okay? This is not anything formal. I sort of have some notes, but I like just conversation. So I've known you as a composer, as someone who makes music. Is that something you always wanted to do? Is that something that you knew from an early age, or is that something that you watched a film or something? I know you grew up in a very musical background. Like, what got you into composing? Was it not composing? Were you going to be a teacher? Were you going to be a film? what was the plan?
Yeah, I mean, good question. Because I feel like there honestly wasn't really a plan at all. And, you know, for the longest time, I wanted to be a baseball player for hometown Texas Rangers. But obviously that didn't really work out. And, you know, this was the other option. And like you said, I grew up in a musical family. So, you know, my parents and my dad, a music teacher, and just, you know, grew up always surrounded by just being exposed to all these different works of art, you know, different pieces of music, different movies from all different eras. And I think also, you know, extended family and friends, and grew up in a very, you know, just like a lot of amazing teachers. And so I think it was just this, it just became this like natural part of me and who I was and how I interact with people and the things I like to share with people and how I express myself was through music and through movies. And so that just kind of became this natural sort of journey for me. And really, as I was growing up, and, you know, I people always ask me, like, what's your favorite? Or do you have like one that, you know, defined like this path for you? And like, it's always a hard answer for me because I like view them as like this, you know, more holistic embodiment of each one has impacted me in different ways. But I think, you know, by the time I got to high school and started, you know, having to actually make decisions about what I wanted to do with my life, then I think that's when I started taking, you know, film more seriously. And I became obsessed with like the AFI top 100 list and like learning all about film history. Then there's, you know, I started listening to more composers and understanding more of the craft of film music, because it's, you know, it's very different than writing music for other mediums. And there's so much, you know, there's a lot of nuance to have with storytelling and also with collaboration with the directors and other artists. And so seeing that this thing that just sort of lit a spark in me. And then I went off to college, University of Tulsa, to study music composition there. And that was a little more like straightforward sort of experience, but it opened me up to like so many other doors. And, you know, I was playing in different ensembles and, you know, different instruments. And I think just really, really trying to just soak up as much as I could. And then after that, I went to the Pacific Northwest Film Scoring Program in Seattle. And that's where, you know, got to hone in more specifically on film music. And then went out to LA after that. And they haven't kicked me out yet. So.
Was there a movie, a score, or was there a composer, or was there something, like you were saying, high school? Was there something there that you were like, I want to do that, or that like changed everything for you? Was there something, or was it just like
I mean, I guess there's a multitude for sure. I'd say a couple that stand out to me. One, I loved the score to The Fountain, for the Aronofsky movie, the score by Clint Mansell. And I just remember watching that in high school, and just there's this like one moment towards the end of the film where there's this sort of this like, you know, release, this epiphany with Hugh Jackman's character, and the music right there just like struck me so hard and so poignant. And I like went and like learned how to play it on the piano, and like would just, you know, just became obsessed with that. I also loved the Coen Brothers movies, and that was really big for me. And like just all of, I think just learning how much joy and fun they have with their movies, and how much of music is a part of that as well, and sort of creating these different worlds, these different styles. And you know, it's, but at the same time I was also like obsessed with like the Disney animated movies, and like growing up on those, and just like the richness of the orchestra, and I don't know, it's just like there's so much like I wanted to consume. And like I started a watch list in probably like 6th, 7th grade, and it's, you know, I've kept that same watch list. It just has kept building and building for a decade since. So
by like having different composers that you admire or watch when you watch films and stuff, I guess my question is always like what's your approach to the score? I've seen several different documentaries come out lately on different composers, obviously, some of the greats, and they all do it totally different. Some just read the script. Some want to watch it with no dialogue. What's your approach? And has that always been the same? Like, have you always sort of stuck to how you, something sparks you and you built that, or has that changed having different, different projects and different people that you've worked with?
Yeah, I think my approach is definitely, I try to be malleable to the situation and to, you know, who I'm working with, or what, you know, what sort of, you know, guidelines, parameters that we have. I think for me, I personally like being involved as early as possible, just because it's, you know, there's so much just formulating of ideas and experimenting. And even if it's just, you know, like conversational, and like we were talking, you and I were talking about El Canto like years ago, like before you had even finished the script. And then, but it's, you know, just having that dialogue. So then once we get to the stage where we're actually putting music to picture, then it's, you know, we're not starting from scratch, and we already have this sort of language and this sort of shared perspective and understanding. So I think also too, like as a composer and post, like, as you know, post is, it's very chaotic, and it's really hard to, especially in indie filmmaking, like having like expectations about timelines and keeping everything, you know, come off the rush of filming. And then it's like, oh wait, now there's this whole other world and process to it. And I feel like, you know, in post, sometimes we tend to get kind of rushed through it, or, you know, sometimes I'd be at the end of projects wishing like I had more time to like actually try those things out. And so that's why, you know, like I said, like being there early as possible, and like seeing scenes as you're filming, like you would send little clips, or like, you know, passing around different ideas, or listening to different other, you know, other music for references or inspiration. And I think, you know, that being able to do that, like, definitely makes it a more fruitful process. And I think it's, you know, it does the due diligence, because I, you know, want to be able to give as much as I can for to serve the picture and to serve the vision. And I think, you know, the more time, the more, like, the better that will be.
Yeah, I feel like it's not fair to, it feels not fair to you, or it feels not fair to a composer, definitely, because it, making an indie film is like, there's holes in the boat, and you're like dumping water to get yeah. the boat to stay afloat, and you're like, oh, we also need a score. And the score is the most, you know, one of the most important things of the entire film. And that's something with Otanta Bakristo that I've heard just from our last screening, is everyone's like, the score is like the character, you know? And I'm like, I know. And but the cool thing is, you did have like an early version of the script. You know, I showed you as much as I could along the way. And I think that's super important. Even if it was super rough, just being like, well, there's this, and, you know, I have this idea. And maybe because it's indie film, there is a little bit of, as much as it stinks because we're so rushed and there's not a lot of money and time, and we're all chasing independent film festival deadlines, which is more stressful. And it's like you're hoping you catch a green light, but it could be a yellow and red light, and you've rushed for no reason. It's maddening at times. And so I always wonder, like, you know, jumping into something so indie and like we're building the airplane on the way down, basically. But you do an incredible job. And what is that like, doing indie film versus a Marvel, you know, Agatha All Along? How many months of preparation are you getting? How much time do you get to do it? And is there anything at the end? That's three questions.
No, that was interesting. As you mentioned, like, you know, I was working on Agatha for almost a year. And then basically as soon as we finished working, then jumped on to El Conto. And it was almost kind of jarring going from, you know, two very different experiences. You know, Agatha's 9 episodes, they're all 30 to 40-ish minutes, so there's a lot of music in there. And then and there's, you know, dealing with studio stuff, and like there's a different you know sort of layers of approval that exist in a different way. But then, you know, I think what I love about going from that to El Tonto is that, you know, I've already felt like, you know, I had just kind of had been in the trenches already and had this sort of this momentum, and this the gears were turning. And I think it was fun. Like, we had all these conversations previously, and I was like, I can't wait to start, can't wait to go, can't wait to do it. And then we finally get in, and then like we're off to the races. And I think it was just really fun, like, finally, you know, it's like, you know, like you're at home practicing your scales, or you're practicing your jump shot or something. And then finally it's like, okay, now we're in the game. Now we're at the concert, getting to actually perform, to actually, you know, feed off each other and put pen to paper or fingers to computer keyboard. And like actually do the thing. And I think that for me is just very energizing. And I was surprised at honestly how quickly went through the score. And like, I was just, you know, I think we found something from all of this, you know, prior conversation that we latched onto. And I think from there, so the film, like, it really kind of reveals like what it needs and what it wants. And, you know, we're just trying to be, you know, caretakers to that.
Yeah, for sure. And it feels like, you know, obviously with El Tonto, it's a full story. And with like Agatha, I mean, like you said, it's series. It's different series, different episodes. So are you, I'm really curious about this. Is there a theme? Are you working with the director on the theme? Is it ever changing? Do you have a little bit of freedom? When you see a scene, are you building like the character arc for her? Is that something that's already set? Because I know, like, with an independent film, it's like, you know, I have an idea, you have an idea, we talk about it. But this is something like, there's lots of people in the room, right? And lots of people just everywhere. I mean, are you working with the director on this? Are you just working with production? Are you just working with Marvel? I'm just so curious about how all that works. That's above my pay grade at the moment.
Yeah, I think for this, you know, it's still at the end of the day, I think whether it's indie or studio, it's still a conversation with the filmmaker or filmmakers. And I think even if there's other people in the room, it's still, and there's maybe a few more voices, it's still at the end of the day, it's, you know, how best can the music serve the story and serve the characters and their journey. And so it's not like Agatha, like we have a showrunner who kind of leads that, and there's, you know, the other editors and other producers and music editors, and like, you know, there's a bigger sort of team that you're having that conversation with. But you know, if the collaboration is good, like it was on that, then it doesn't feel as, you know, as big, and it still feels intimate and personal. And I think that's, you know, I try to strive to have that in like any sort of collaboration, no matter who I'm working with. And and so I feel, you know, El Tonto is very much the similar sort of way, where it's, you know, it's like we're, it feels, you know, almost like we're hanging out, like, I mean, literally the first time I watched it with you, we were just hanging out, drinking beers and enjoying it. And so I think that's, you know,
the wild, wild
capturing
West.
That. Yeah. Get the Lone Star and the Shining.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
You know, enjoy it. And I think for me, like, the minute filmmaking is not fun, then that's where I'm worried, or that's where I'm, you know, try to capture that in as much as possible.
Yeah, because I feel like you do, you've done so many short films, you've done so many big films, independent films, and like you always feel cool as a cucumber, you know, like I think it's just, do you think that's like a lot of like just being around it with like your mom and dad, being around music, being at a certain school, being surrounded by it, like maybe even like in the Orthodox Church, like there's just music all around you and you're constantly, it's like a subconscious thing, you know, it's like maybe me, my dad being a traveling evangelist and always being involved with like puppeteering and like acting. And this part, like when I'm writing or if I'm directing, it just seems second nature in a way.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like, it just feels like, when I'm, here's what's crazy is when I'm not doing those things, I feel a little bit awkward. I feel out of place.
Yeah.
So do you feel like when you're, because I've seen some like photos and videos of you, like, you know, when you're conducting and people are playing and stuff, it just feels like, you know, it feels like a quarterback in the NFL. Like it's just that 1 to 2 seconds is already there, right? They're already like 2 seconds ahead. It just feels natural. Is that from, you think, your upbringing, or is that from like having a mentor in college or a mentor in Hollywood? What do you think? Or is it the whole gamut?
No, definitely the whole gamut. And I think, like you said, it's, you know, it's natural, and it feels like an extension of yourself. And I think, like for me, like it's like, I can't imagine not like making music and not doing those things, because then it just feels, I always joke like at the end of projects, like I get depressed because I'm like, I don't know what to do with myself.
And right,
like, you know, you feel like also like the fire just sort of like, you know, dwindled a little, and you're like, why do you, I gotta keep feeling it, I gotta, you know, find that next thing or find that next sort of creative outlet. And it just feels like this something that, like, you know, you can't exist without it. And I think, you know, it's, like you said, it's part of the upbringing. I think also had some amazing mentors along the way. And I think, you know, each, you know, stop, it's like learning something different and being able to, you know, assemble this like tool chest and finding the right, you know, time to use that. And so shout out, like, you know, my dad, of course, music teacher, and my band teacher, Mr. Onella Greenhill, and my film teacher, Mr. Doyle, both, you know, I think helps you sort of like open up those doors, the curiosity. So then went off to school and, you know, continued that. And then when I was in LA, you know, worked with the composer Christoph Beck, and have gained a lot from that mentorship, and really thankful for my relationship with him, because it's he's worked on all these amazing projects and given me the access and responsibilities and opportunities to like contribute to that. And I think that's been a really important part of what I can learn from him and his process and apply it to myself and to my own work. And I think, in whatever field you are, like that, it's important, having that mentorship for learning. I think for me, I always want to be learning, and that's something that I am conscious about in everything I work on, and finding ways to learn from other people or find new approaches to things or learn, new instruments or new software, new like concepts. And I think just anything that's, pushing me out of my comfort zone. And I think it's just so rich, and there's so much out there that, you want a buffet, you want to eat it all.
For sure. So whenever I'm writing something, or if I'm in production, it's really hard for me to watch films, or what's crazy is even listen to music. But when I rap, I like just dive right into the theater. I go to see actual live theater. I listen to music again. I carry 1,000 different little Moleskines that I write. I'll be at a party and someone says something, and I'm like, I just write it down, because it could be a line from something, what's your process like? When you're done, do you like go to tons of concerts? Do you go see movies? When you're prepping, if you're writing, can you hear anything, or do you like to dive into something to be inspired? Like, what's your process on getting ready for, let's just say independent film, since this is Wild West filmmaking. Let's just say when you're getting ready for an independent film, like, what do you do to get prepared, from reading the script to listening to things? Or I would just want to know that.
Yeah. So my process, it honestly starts the same for whatever project. And that's, I love just making a big, huge Spotify playlist, and we'll put, different things that might inspire me. And it might not be like the same genre as whatever I'm working on, but it's something that maybe there's a certain sound or a certain instrument that appeals to me, or there's a certain emotion that's evoked from that I want to, try to channel in whatever it is. And then like for something like for El Tonto, like there is no score that really exists in kind of what we were going for. And actually like talked like about like not putting any tempo music as well, because our temporary music, for listeners that don't know, it's sort of pre-existing stuff that you'll drop in with the edit to sort of give an idea or a vibe or a sense of what you're hoping the score will portray. But sometimes that can be helpful for conversations, but sometimes that can, lock you into certain ideas that might not work. There might, be better solutions out there. So I think that's something that we talked about, was like not, being open-minded with that and having, I think, more freedom to explore. And so, I'm listening, listening to Orthodox chant, and listening to some more, folksy music. And like you said, like, I think one of the good references you said was like the Neil Young Dead Man score. And that, something that I wasn't as familiar with, but like understanding sort of the tone and like the, approach that they have with that movie. Then also listening to the Polyphonic Spree, because, getting to actually work directly with these incredible singers. And I feel like it's all just kind of goes into this big melting pot. And I just listen over and over on shuffle, and like just have this, sort of pick every time I listen to a track, like, hone in on something different, pick something new. And I'd say like, it helps me sort of like if I'm stuck, once I'm getting into the writing process, and I can kind of go back and like, oh yeah, I remember how I felt on that thing. Or here's something that you and I talked about for, that we know we liked in this other piece of music. And, I think, that's it's such a collaborative and constructive medium, and you're constantly building on, you know, things that came before and understanding, you know, the legacy of that and how we fit in.
Yeah. It's crazy because you mentioned working with the Polyphonic Spree on this, the choir, and then Tim DeLauder being in the film. I really think that things that are the people are always wanting to know, like, what's the spark? And when I watch certain films, they just seem so magical. I think a lot of it has to do with just like getting to create with your buddies, your friends.
Yeah.
And I really do feel like that comes across, like it comes across in albums, you know, like certain Beatle albums, you know, when they were like hanging out, when they weren't, it's just felt that way. And I feel like, you know, that's why I love Wes Anderson's film so much, because it just feels like it's a bunch of friends at summer camp who are getting to create something all across the board, and they're getting to run away from the daily things that they have to do, and it just feels so magical. Is that something for you? Does it make things easier, or obviously it's more fun, but do you have relationships with the directors that you work with? Is it something that makes the project a little bit more cohesive and composing, or is it just something like it's the script, it's the genre? I mean, I know you've done so many things, but you still have so much, so far to go. Is that something that you desire to do? Is this like really work with certain directors and let it be a process? Because after a while, it feels like, you know, anybody on a baseball team or anybody in a band or anybody, you know, if you're playing basketball, I love playing basketball. It's like you almost know where someone's going to be, you know? It's like if you do it behind the back,
yeah, exactly.
There. Does it feel that way in composing? I'm just curious, because I feel like as a director, it's really helpful for me to write for actors and to work with the same actors. And also, I mean, I've only done 2 feature films and you've been my composer, but it just seems like we're on the same wavelength. Is that something that you feel more comfortable with, or is it more exciting to work with different directors and different projects?
Yeah, no, 100%. It's all about relationships. And I think, you know, you see throughout history, a lot of the best, greatest composers all have these, you know, directors they've worked with over and over and over again. And it's because you develop this, you know, secondhand, and you understand each other, and, you know, filmmaking or actually any sort of art, like creative process, it's so vulnerable, and you have to build this trust with each other. And I think that's, you know, and each director has like a different way of communicating. And so that's, for me, like almost the challenge is like going from different director to director, you know, having to change my mindset or change how I might express or share things. It's 'cause it's, you know, it's a shared communication you have with each person. It's, you know, it's personalized to them and to, you know, their process. And, you know, I think for me, like that's exciting. And I think that I love that aspect. And a lot of people I work with, you know, I've worked with multiple times and hope to can keep working with, because it's, you know, it's when it clicks, like you can feel it. And like it's like you said, it's you're having fun, you're hanging with your friends at summer camp. And like, that's ultimately, I think that's, for me, like that's the goal of these sort of collaborations. 'Cause it's like, it's such a stressful and challenging, you know, world and industry. And so I think if you're able to find that camaraderie and it's, you know, and strengthen each other and empower each other. And I think that's, you know, and also pushing each other to, you know, unlock different levels of creativity you might not have reached on your own. And I think there's some sort of, you know, higher being or higher power to that, that's you know, that comes from that collaboration.
Yeah, I think that's, would you say that you were an apprentice to when you started your composing out in Los Angeles? So is that, you think that was really important for you to be under someone's wing out in Los Angeles, which is like, it's you're in Hollywood. And was it for the musical, the technical aspect, or was it for the business? Which part, was it the business side that really helped you out, like navigating because I know like a lot of people, like for me, like growing up, I wanted to be part of film. But you know, there was no internet. I used to go to the library and watch, like, I mean, I read books on Hitchcock and Spielberg, and but if you didn't go to NYU or USC, it just seemed like the doors were shut. So I got into acting just to, like, get my foot in the door, and then, you know, slowly realized I wanted to tell the story and write the story. But I never really had a mentor in that realm, and I really wish I would have. For you, do you think like that was important to navigate what you're doing now, say with Marvel? Is that was that a huge door, and you can concentrate more on your art?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely, you know, has had a huge impact. I think, you know, being, you know, with Chris too, like he's so generous and sort of what, you know, the opportunities that he gives people, and such a small team that like you're very involved on those projects and getting a chance to really participate in each part of the process. And I think you can, you know, you can learn only so much in school, and you can only learn so much from interviews and reading. And, but at the end of the day, like the best learning tool is like actually doing it. And, I think there's, you know, it's also sort of like a safe space too, in that like you're learning under the wing of someone else and getting, you know, getting a chance to kind of, you know, develop and learn from that, and getting insight into different parts of the process that, you know, it's not always, I guess, common knowledge. Or, I mean, again, also each person has their own process as well. And so taking, like I said earlier, like taking the best bits from it, there are parts that resonate with you, and then, you know, making it your own. And so I think that's, yeah, I think for me has definitely been a huge, huge thing that I'm thankful for. And I know it's, you know, an important part of, you know, the, like you said, the apprenticeship, and I think any sort of craftsmanship and any sort of, you know, skill like that, whether it's in film or not, like it's, I think it's important to, you know, to have, I figures, but like you said, like not a lot of people, you know, come up that way too. And like, there's so many other routes to get where you are. And, you know, it's daunting in some ways, but I think it's also liberating as well. Cause it's, you know, there's not one way to do it. And it's, this is a path that's, you know, worked for me, but it's, you know, each person has their own sort of path.
Yeah, I'm always so curious about that, because especially in this day and age of like technology, you can be anywhere in the world and score something or write something or be a part of something. So you feel like for you being in Los Angeles, like actually physically being in Los Angeles, that's what you needed. Mentally too. I mean, that's just something that you decided on.
Yeah, I think just
timing.
Yeah, I think being, you know, just so immersed into like-minded people, or people, you know, like just really like in, you know, involved in this world. And I think that was important for me to, you know, as I'm learning and trying to, you know, get myself started. And but it's, yeah, it's, I think, you know, like I said, like it's the technology, like now filmmaking is, you know, it's somewhat, it seems like it's being sort of decentralized in a way. Like it's, as it's become this more global, you know, connected issue, that I think to me, like that's really exciting. And like I went to Cannes last year for the first time, and that was really fun. Just, I like barely met anyone from the US. Most of the people I was talking to are from all over different parts of the world. And I think to me, that's something really exciting, because it's, you know, we're coming together and sharing this shared love of cinema and storytelling. And that even if we don't speak the same languages or have the same upbringings, like it is still something that we can, you know, find common ground and, you know, enjoy joy with each other. And I think to me that like that's, at the end of the day, like we're humans telling stories. Like we've been, you know, since 100%. The dawn of history, like, and this is just another way of doing that.
Yeah, I think that's what's so crazy is there's so many stories to tell. And, you know, people always say like well, hasn't that story already been told? Well, that story had been told, but there's, you know, just my upbringing of my dad being a traveling evangelist. That movie's not even out yet, and that's going to be a really great film. You know, you're going to love that score. Do you think that you have a Michael Paris-Gavis sound? Is that something that, because I go back and forth, like with directors, like there's directors I'm like, you know, that's a so-and-so film. But when you watch like some Scorsese films, like, or a David Gordon Green film, they don't really feel like a certain film. Like a Paul Thomas Anderson always feels like a Paul Thomas Anderson film, or like a Tarkovsky. And there's certain things like, do you think that maybe you don't get to decide that? That maybe just over time, your plethora of work decides it for you? Because I don't know if I mean, obviously, my last two feature films look nothing alike. And maybe they have the same tone. I don't know. Do you feel like just from the outside looking in that you have a Michael Paris-Gavis sound? Do you want to have something that's recognizable? I know that's a loaded question, but
yeah, I don't think it's anything conscious. I'm sure there's something there. And I know it's part of it is probably also like tastes and stuff, you know, things that I'm drawn to as a creator. And I think, I feel like, you know, people talk about like finding your voice, and I, you know, think about that, cause I'm like, sometimes I don't really know what that means. And I think also like with film too, like your voice is kind of adapting to what the story is and what, you know, what the characters are and like what those themes are. And so it's really, I think for me, like, I love the idea of being, you know, having versatility and being able to, you know, go from like an action movie and then do like an animated musical to doing like a, you know, a more abstract art house indie film and then going to like a pop tins or something. So it's just, I think for me, like, I just love exploring and I love like learning new things that maybe I'm not as familiar with or things that might seem challenging. I think to me, that's the exciting part of it. And so, but there's other people that, you know, they hone in on one style of music or one specific, you know, way of storytelling and they excel at that. And they like, you know, it's you can build, I guess, a career off of that. But I think for me, it's I love the, you know, the variety is the spice of life.
Only time will tell. Only time will tell.
So it's up to someone else, I guess, to really, I guess, connect all the dots and probably more.
There'll be a day when it was just like, yeah, that's so Paris-Gavis. that score was so Paris-Gavis. What would you, so this, since this is like Wild West filmmaking and we're just talking because, like, you know, the whole point of this podcast is like, I almost died making my first feature film where I thought I was going to die, like physically, like literally on the floor of Alamo Drafthouse. And that can be a story sometime. Yeah. You know, I made that feature film and I'm doing this podcast so people don't have to almost die. And like, what would you tell, I know this is very broad because there's so many different aspects of composing in film. Like, what's one piece of advice or guidance that you would give to someone who wants to be composing for feature films or for short films or just in general? Like, what's the 1, 2, 3 punch that you would say, like, things that you have to do? I mean, everybody's different, but what do you think?
Yeah. The thing that I always tell, like, I meet with a lot of young composers that are, you know, asking questions and we're trying to learn how to, you know, how to get into the industry. And I think for me, one of the main things I always like to say is, you know, go listen to music and go watch movies and go experience things that, like, you don't normally like or you don't, you know, not normally accustomed to. Because it's, I think, one, from a practical standpoint, like, you never know what the next project, like, what you're going to get asked to do. And you end up sometimes in some really fun, weird territories that, you know, you wonder how you get there. But I think number two is also just experiencing different perspectives than your own and understanding, like, you know, why we tell stories and why people feel compelled to share these stories and how you as a composer can, you know, resonate with that and, you know, strengthen, you know, whatever the vision is of the directors and, you know, how to sympathize with different characters. And I think that's, you know, an emotional versatility, I think is very important as a composer, because that's essentially what you're doing is, you know, you're, you know, coming into this world and kind of distilling it into this, you know, more abstract sonic experience, but it's all in support of what's happening. I think, yeah, for me, it's, I always just say, like, you know, I like going to like concerts and I love experiencing live music and I love learning music that I haven't listened to before, that's not as familiar to me. And I think just always trying to, again, to learn. And I think that's such an important part of the process.
Yeah. I mean, are you constantly listening to, do you hear music per se or sounds when you're just out and about? Is that something you're conscious of? Like if it's like some weird truck backing up and it's like scraping the ground, it's like, you're like, oh, that's something that could be, or it makes you feel something, right? It makes you,
yeah.
It's like it goes in your subconscious. And like, for me, it's the same way. It's like when someone does a weird movement or a weird, you know, quote or whatever, it like sticks in my brain and I'm like, that's something I've never thought of that before. Is that something, because I know with Alfonso Per Cristo, you were really coming up with some sounds and that were, it wasn't sound design, but it was, and but it wasn't score, but it was, and you were bringing all that in. Is that something you've always been conscious of? Do you think like music is just sounds and then you're bringing that in? Cause it seemed very natural how you did that and very, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say, yeah, like music is all around us and it's, I mean, you can go like down the John Cage route of like it is just sounds and it is just, you know, it's just this sound over time and this experiential sort of thing. But I think, yeah, it's something that I am, I guess, heightened. I have a heightened awareness to, you know, if I'm in a restaurant, like I'm always clocking whatever the music is, even like I can barely hear it. Like, it's just something like I'm always aware of and noticing, or like you said, like a truck backing up, like to me, that is like, there is something musical in that in nature. And I actually have like, you know, I think seeing like how music like interacts with our physical space and how, you know, how much a part of it is of our everyday lives. And I think to me, that's really fascinating. And I actually have kind of came up with a word that I like to call sonardipity, where it's, you know, it's this, you know, this idea of like, you know, that's this, almost as if like music like scoring our everyday lives and like,
yeah,
how there's these moments that you have throughout the day where it's, you know, like for me, like a fun one is like when you're sitting at a traffic light and your blinker is like in sync with the music on the radio, or like there's I don't know, just instances like that where it's just like there's this, I think music has this very like divine transcendental quality to it. And for as long as, you know, humans been making music, and there is, you know, something that I think everyone experiences in their own way with that connection. And so I think, yeah, for me, it's music. Music's everywhere. It's
yeah. I mean, I can attest for that. Just how you brought on Alfonso Per Cristo the sounds of the bees, the floors. I mean, even when someone's walking, you had someone play with a pick on the guitar and go backwards, like, and it was sonically beautiful and sonically you felt things and the sound with the Scimitron. And
and then like bringing in a beautiful score at the same time. What really quickly, what is your, how do you, is it, maybe this is subconscious, how do you process knowing when to have simple sounds and then to have a beautiful score? Because I know there's moments in a Marvel film or an Agatha where there, it's, you know, it needs to be loud, it needs to be big. Even in our film, it would seem the same way. But there was moments when you knew to not disappear, but step back for a second and then bring it in, or say, I think several times we had this conversation, you were like, you would turn to me, we were watching, and you go, maybe there's no score here. And yeah. I don't know how many composers, it's like telling a doctor, like, he doesn't want to cut or something. It was such a beautiful thing for me. I felt really trusted, and I felt really safe knowing when you were like, maybe it's just the words, maybe it's just the sound of the bees. Is that just, that's just something you have to learn over time, or is it something that's just it's in your gut? Is that what you feel? How do you know that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely write with my gut. I think, you know, sometimes I think I can over emote, and I think for me, like, that's probably the hardest thing is showing restraint as a composer, because you want to, like, I feel like the tendency for many people is to, like, you know, you want to have all these big soaring melodies and this, like, big orchestral thing, or, you know, all these really cool intricate textures that, you know, might sound really, really sophisticated and awesome on their own. But then once you put it with a picture and you have the sound design, you have the dialogue, and you have, you know, a finite amount of auditory space, like, then you can quickly tell whether it fits or not. And, like, if it, and more often than not, it's because the music is musicking too hard. And, like, you need to, and so I think that's something I've, you know, learned over the years from Chris and from other mentors, that, you know, it's being very intentional and deliberate with, you know, with the music. And if the music is there, like, what is the purpose of it? You know, each note needs to have a reason for being there, and it needs to, you know, you need to understand, like, what it's doing in context and how that affects the audience and affects, you know, people's experience with the film. And so I think that's something that I think is also, you know, a sensitivity that you kind of gain from working on different types of projects, you know, because you said, like, a Marvel film, like, a big fight scene is going to have a lot more, I guess, room for music to really kind of, you know, be present. But for El Tonto, like, that same level would have been completely inappropriate. And I think, especially some of our early demos, having to, like, you know, trim the fat here and there to really find, like, that right balance. There is a dynamic quality that you kind of find throughout the story. And so it's not, you don't have just, like, you know, drones throughout the whole thing. You also don't have, like, big epic orchestra through the whole thing, but finding, you kind of find what those poles are and then learning how to, you know, work within those boundaries.
Yeah. You guys have the toughest job, because you can make or break a project, you know, and the music changes everything. But I've been lucky enough to work with you, and you've really enhanced and made my films more than I could ever imagine. I have a couple more questions. This is, we're almost out of time. This is a little rapid fire. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. What's your favorite score you wish you'd written?
Oh, wow. good question. Sorry, this is not rapid fire.
Yeah, maybe it's The Fountain.
Yeah, I mean, it could be The Fountain. I don't know. I guess Star Wars, again, like, such, like,
yeah, I mean,
iconic piece, and, you know, like,
for sure.
I think just knowing, like, the impact of what music has within that universe, I think it'd be cool to do, like, a Star Wars thing someday.
Yeah, to change the landscape of cinema, just
yeah, you know, just casual.
Yeah. I mean, because whenever they play it, you know, to people without the score, without the sound effects, people are like, this is the worst thing ever. And now it's, like, the most iconic. You hear it and you come, like, running out of your bedroom. What's your favorite film soundtrack of all time? Do you have one?
Uh, don't know if I have like one favorite, but one I do, I think, go back to a lot is Shawshank Redemption by Thomas Newman.
Hey.
And I think what he does so well with it is just this, you know, finding this balance of, you know, it's not over sentimental, but it has its moments of, you know, of being broader, but then it feels the way he evokes, you know, the characters on screen and like the building the world of the prison. I think it's really beautiful.
And that's one of my favorite films of all time. And like they released it in theaters, then pulled it because it did so bad. And they released it. They released it again, and it did do good again.
Yeah.
And then it came out.
And now it's hard. Yeah.
Well, now it's like everyone's like top.
Always on cable. Like it's always there.
American film, and it is. It's one of the greatest films. Yeah. You know, it's Roger Deakins of the Coen Brothers. Now I'm gonna have to go back and listen and watch it for the score, because I've always known there was this sensitivity to it. And like an upliftingness to it. And wow, that really, I need to go back and you just gave me some homework. Okay. Last question. Do you write in the morning or do you write late at night or does it matter?
Yeah.
Or do you change the change?
Yeah. I hate working late. So as much as I can, I find my mornings are most productive before. I love getting up early. Lighting some candles, you know, have my coffee and then working like before all the emails and Slack messages start flooding in. And I think just having, protecting that space. So then, you know, by the evening I can go, you know, go to a concert, go to a ball game, go to a movie, enjoy myself. So.
Yeah. I found that
person.
I used to I used to think I was a good writer, like after like a bottle or two of wine. And I realized I don't think that works for me anymore. So like, I bounced back. I remember Quentin Tarantino said he was writing like 2 a.m. was his go time. Now he like gets up at 8, has coffee, and he's done by noon. And I think we just change. Things change over time. And that's something that I'm realizing. Like the things I was able to do with This Role Won't Break, there's no way I could ever do. I could make a picture like that again. I mean, it was 24/7, I was by myself, and now it's good to have a team, and it's good to have a good night's sleep and to have a Tempur-Pedic bed and a mouth guard.
Oh, 100%. That's a good one.
And I'm like, I'll trade that for making good cinema. So do you have anything you want to talk about, anything coming up, or is everything under wraps? I know a lot of the things you do are on the down low until things happen, or are you exploring? Are you waiting, looking for new things?
Yeah, I'm always exploring, always looking. I think one thing I'm excited about now that I've just started working on is an album, actually, a concept album that based off a short film that my partner made, Caitlin Alley. And, you know, it's a fun sort of, you know, homage to video games and to these different, you know, pop styles and some sci-fi stuff. And I think we're, you know, excited to explore this world that's, you know, quite different than some of the other worlds we've been talking about.
That sounds great. And see, you're always changing, and I love that. I need to start adapting into that realm. Well, Michael, thank you for hopping on Wild West Filmmaking Podcast. Everybody can find you on social media, and they can find you on IMDb. Check out his IMDb. It's really amazing. And if you ever get a chance to shake Michael's hand or hug his neck, do so. All right.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks for being on. Until next time, everybody. Goodbye.